Chapter 15. Noise day broad, that Miller Loveday had received a letter, and, his cart having been heard coming up the lane, the population of Overcombe drew down towards the mill. As soon as he had gone indoors, a sudden flash of brightness from the window showing that he had struck such an early light as nothing but the immediate deciphering of literature could require. Letters were matters of public moment, and everybody in the parish had an interest in the reading of those rare documents, so that when the miller had placed the candle, slanted himself, and called in Mrs. Garland, to have her opinion on the meaning of any hieroglyphics that he might encounter in his course, he found that he was to be additionally assisted by the opinions of the other neighbors, whose persons appeared in the doorway, partly covering each other like a hand of cards, yet each showing a large enough piece of himself for identification. To pass the time, while they were arranging themselves, the miller adopted his usual way of filling up casual intervals, that of snuffing the candle. "We heard you had got a letter, Maister Loveday," apostrophe they said. "Yes, Southampton, the 12th of August, dear father," said Loveday, and they were as silent as relations at the reading of a will. Anne, for whom the letter had a singular fascination, came in with her mother and sat down. Bob stated in his own way that having, since landing, taken into consideration his father's wish that he should renounce a seafaring life and become a partner in the mill, he had decided to agree to the proposal, and with that object in view he would return to Overcombe in 3 days from the time of writing. He then said incidentally that since his voyage he had been in lodgings at Southampton, and during that time had become acquainted with a lovely and virtuous young maiden, in whom he found the exact qualities necessary to his happiness. Having known this lady for the full space of a fortnight, he had had ample opportunities of studying her character, and, being struck with the recollection that, if there was one thing more than another necessary in a mill which had no mistress, it was somebody who could play that part with grace and dignity, he had asked Miss Matilda Johnson to be his wife. In her kindness she, though sacrificing far better prospects, had agreed, and he could not but regard it as a happy chance that he should have found at the nick of time such a woman to adorn his home, whose innocence was as stunning as her beauty. Without much ado, therefore, he and S. he had arranged to be married at once, and at Overcombe, that his father might not be deprived of the pleasures of the wedding feast. S. he had kindly consented to follow him by land in the course of a few days, and to live in the house as their guest for the week or so previous to the ceremony. "'Tis a proper good letter," apostrophe said Mrs. Comfort from the background. "I never heard true love better put out of hand in my life, and they seem nation fond of one another. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he haven't known her such a very long time," apostrophe said Job Mitchell dubiously. "That's nothing," apostrophe said Esther Beach. "Nader will find her way, very rapid when the times come forth. Well, 'tis good news for ye, Miller." Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, sure, I hope 'tis, apostrophe said Loveday, without, however, showing any great hurry, to burst into the frantic form of fatherly joy which the event should naturally have produced, seeming more disposed to let off his feelings by examining thoroughly into the fibers of the letter paper. "I was 5 years a courting my wife," apostrophe he presently remarked. "But folks were slower about everything in them days. Well, since she's coming we must make her welcome. Did any of ye catch by my reading which day it is he means? What with making out the penmanship, my mind was drawn off from the sense here and there. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he says in 3 days, apostrophe said Mrs. Garland. The date of the letter will fix it." Apostrophe, apostrophe, on examination it was found that the day appointed was the one nearly expired, at which the miller jumped up and said, "Then he'll be here before bedtime. I didn't gather till now that he was coming afore Saturday. Why, he may drop in this very minute." Apostrophe, he had scarcely spoken, when footsteps were heard coming along the front, and they presently halted at the door. Loveday pushed through the neighbors and rushed out, and, seeing in the passage a form which obscured the declining light, the miller seized hold of him, saying, "Oh my dear Bob, then you are come. Scrounge it all, miller, don't quite pull my poor shoulder out of joint. Whatever is the matter?" said the newcomer, trying to release himself from Loveday's grasp of affection. It was Uncle Benji. Thought was my son. Faltered the miller, sinking back upon the toes of the neighbors who had closely followed him into the entry. "Well, come in, Mr. Dairyman, and make yourself at home. Why, you haven't been here for years. Whatever has made you come now, sir, of all times in the world?" "Is he in there with ye?" Whispered the farmer with misgiving. "Who?" "My nephew, after that maid, that he so mighty smit with?" "Oh no, he never calls here." Farmer Dairyman breathed a breath of relief. "Well, I've called to tell ye," he said, "that there's more news of the French. We shall have 'em here this month as sure as a gun. The gunboats be already near 2,000 of 'em, and the whole army is at Bowlin. And, miller, I know ye to be an honest man." Loveday did not say nay. "Neighbor Loveday, I know ye to be an honest man," repeated the old squireen. "Can I speak to ye alone?" As the house was full, Loveday took him into the garden, all the while upon tenter hooks, not lest Buonaparte should appear in their midst, but lest Bob should come, whilst he was not there to receive him. When they had got into a corner, Uncle Benji said, "Miller, what with the French, and what with my nephew Festus, I assure ye my life is nothing but wear it from morning to night. Miller Loveday, you are an honest man." Loveday nodded. "Well, I've come to ask a favor to ask, if you will take charge of my few poor title deeds and documents and such like, while I am away from home next week, lest anything should befall me, and they should be stole away by Bonier Festus, and I should have nothing left in the wide world. I can trust neither banks nor lawyers in these terrible times, and I am come to you." Loveday, after some hesitation, agreed to take care of anything that Dairyman should bring, whereupon the farmer said he would call with the parchments and papers alluded to in the course of a week. Dairyman then went away by the garden gate, mounted his pony, which had been tethered outside, and rode until his form was lost in the shades. The miller rejoined his friends, and found that in the meantime John had arrived. John informed the company that after parting from his father and Anne, he had rambled to the harbor and discovered the Pewit by the quay. On inquiry, he had learned that she came in at 11 o'clock and that Bob had gone ashore. "We'll go and meet him," said the miller. "'Tis still light out of doors." So, as the dew rose from the meads and formed fleeces in the hollows, Loveday and his friends and neighbors strolled out and loitered by the stiles which hampered the footpath from Overcombe to the high road at intervals of 100 yards. John Loveday, being obliged to return to camp, was unable to accompany them, but Widow Garland thought proper to fall in with the procession. When she had put on her bonnet, she called to her daughter. Anne said from upstairs that she was coming in a minute, and her mother walked on without her. What was Anne doing? Having hastily unlocked a receptacle for emotional objects of small size, she took thence the little folded paper with which we have already become acquainted, and, striking a light from her private tinder box, she held the paper and curl of hair it contained in the candle till they were burnt. Then she put on her hat, and followed her mother and the rest of them across the moist gray fields, cheerfully singing in an undertone as she went, to assure herself of her indifference to circumstances. XV. Captain Bob Loveday of the Merchant Service, while Loveday and his neighbors were thus rambling forth, full of expectancy, some of them, including Anne in the rear, heard the crackling of light wheels along the curved lane to which the path was the cord. At once Anne thought, perhaps that's he, and we are missing him. But recent events were not of a kind to induce her to say anything, and the others of the company did not reflect on the sound. Had they gone across to the hedge which hid the lane, and looked through it, they would have seen a light cart driven by a boy, beside whom was seated a seafaring man, apparently of good standing in the merchant service, with his feet outside on the shaft. The vehicle went over the main bridge, turned in upon the other bridge at the tail of the mill, and halted by the door. The sailor alighted, showing himself to be a well-shaped, active, and fine young man, with a bright eye, an anonymous nose, and of such a rich complexion by exposure to ripening suns, that he might have been some connection of the foreigner who calls his likeness the portrait of a gentleman in galleries of the old masters. Yet in spite of this, and though Bob Loveday had been all over the world from Cape Horn to Pekin, and from India's coral strand to the White Sea, the most conspicuous of all the marks that he had brought back with him was an increased resemblance to his mother, who had lain all the time beneath over Calm Church wall. Captain Loveday tried the house door. Finding this locked, he went to the mill door. This was locked also, the mill being stopped for the night. They are not at home, he said to the boy. But never mind that. Just help to unload the things, and then I'll pay you, and you can drive off home. The cart was unloaded, and the boy was dismissed, thanking the sailor profusely for the payment rendered. Then Bob Loveday, finding that he had still some leisure on his hands, looked musingly east, west, north, south, and nadder. After which he bestirred himself by carrying his goods, article by article, round to the back door, out of the way of casual passers. This done, he walked round the mill in a more regardful attitude, and surveyed its familiar features one by one. The panes of the grinding room, now as heretofore clouded with flour, as with stale hoar frost, the meal lodged in the corners of the windowsills, forming a soil in which lichens grew without ever getting any bigger, as they had done since his smallest infancy, the mosses on the plinth towards the river, reaching as high as the capillary power of the walls, would fetch up moisture for their nourishment, and the penned mill pond, now as ever on the point of overflowing into the garden. Everything was the same. When he had had enough of this, it occurred to Loveday that he might get into the house in spite of the locked doors, and by entering the garden, placing a pole from the fork of an apple tree to the window sill of a bedroom on that side, and climbing across like a Barbary ape, he entered the window and stepped down inside. There was something anomalous in being close to the familiar furniture without having first seen his father, and its silent impassive shine was not cheering. It was as if his relations were all dead, and only their tables and chests of drawers left to greet him. He went downstairs, and seated himself in the dark parlor. Finding this place too, rather solitary, and the tick of the invisible clock preternaturally loud, he unearthed the tinder box, obtained a light, and set about making the house comfortable for his father's return, divining that the miller had gone out to meet him by the wrong road. Robert's interest in this work increased as he proceeded, and he bustled round and round the kitchen as lightly as a girl. David, the indoor factotum, having lost himself among the quart pots of Budmouth, there had been nobody left here to prepare supper, and Bob had it all to himself. In a short time a fire blazed up the chimney, a tablecloth was found, the plates were clapped down, and a search made for what provisions the house afforded, which, in addition to various meats, included some fresh eggs of the elongated shape that produces cockerels when hatched, and had been set aside on that account for putting under the next broody hen. A more reckless cracking of eggs than that which now went on had never been known in Overcombe since the last large christening. And as Loveday gashed one on the side, another at the end, another long ways, and another diagonally, he acquired adroitness by practice, and at last, made every son of a hen of them fall into two hemispheres as neatly as if it opened by a hinge. From X he proceeded to ham, and from ham to kidneys, the result being a brilliant fry. Not to be tempted to fall to before his father came back, the returned navigator emptied the whole into a dish, laid a plate over the top, his coat over the plate, and his hat over his coat. Thus completely stopping in the appetizing smell, he sat down to await events. He was relieved from the tediousness of doing this by hearing voices outside, and in a minute his father entered. "Glad to welcome me home, father," apostrophe said Bob. "And supper is just ready. Apostrophe, apostrophe, lard, lard, why, Captain Bob's here." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Mrs. Garland. "And we've been out waiting to meet thee." "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said the miller, as he entered the room, followed by representatives of the houses of Cripplestraw, Comfort, Mitchell, Beach, and Snooks, together with some small beginnings of fencible Tremlett's posterity. In the rear came David, and quite in the vanishing point of the composition, and the fair. "I drove over, and so was forced to come by the road," apostrophe said Bob. "And we went across the fields, thinking you'd walk," apostrophe said his father. "I should have been here this morning, but not so much as a wheelbarrow could I get for my traps. Everything was gone to the review. So I went to, thinking I might meet you there. I was then obliged to return to the harbor for the luggage." Apostrophe, apostrophe, then there was a welcoming of Captain Bob, by pulling out his arms like drawers and shutting them again, smacking him on the back, as if he were choking, holding him at arm's length, as if he were of too large type to read close. All which persecution Bob bore with a wide genial smile, that was shaken in two fragments, and scattered promiscuously among the spectators. "Get a chair for N." Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the miller to David, whom they had met in the fields, and found to have got nothing worse by his absence than a slight slant in his walk. "Never mind, I am not tired, I have been here ever so long," apostrophe said Bob. "And I apostrophe," but the chair having been placed behind him, and a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.